This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Alien Covenant, Diarrhea of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul, Everything, Everything, and Norman. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, I've got two special interviews, and the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Powers Booth died this week. He was age 68. He died in his sleep, and he was one of those sort of like great villainous character actors. And what I find so interesting about Powers Booth is everybody remembers him for something different. I mean, there's people who remember him for doing Deadwood. I personally remember him from generally some cheesy movies. I mean, yeah, he was in Tombstone, and he was pretty dastardly in that. But he was one of those people who was good looking enough, especially when he was younger, good looking enough, but he was like the bad guy attractive man. I don't know how well he would have done doing very many hero roles, which is why he always took bad guys. He was a bad guy in 24. He was one to get a corrupt president. I remember in Sudden Death, which was this awful movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme trying to stop terrorists from blowing up a hockey stadium. He was the bad guy in that. Powers Booth has been in a ton of movies and a ton of TV shows. He was a great character actor in terms of being the recognizable that guy, but never sort of like hitting that level of, you know, Tom Cruise or somebody you're going to put on the top of a poster, unless it's a movie like Sudden Death, where he's sort of recognizable to the genre crowd. And it's sad to see him go. He was always reliable to be kind of the crazy bad guy. We also saw him in stuff like MacGruber, one of my favorite movies that bombed horribly. So anyways, sad to see Powers Booth go. You will be missed. A couple other pieces of news. There have been pickups being shot for Justice League, which of course people are oh my gosh, does that mean that they're, no, pickup, they do pickups for every movie. Every movie gets pickups and even some minor reshoots. Hollywood always budgets for that. And so them doing that at this point, you know, because the movie doesn't come out for a while, there's still plenty of time. There are rumors of massive reshoots, but there's rumors for everything. And I think that the people are really gunning for Zack Snyder and don't want him to have a success. Oddly, on the other hand, spinning into another piece of news, Wonder Woman, and I talked about this a couple weeks ago, where there's sort of like this aggressive neo-feminism push that Wonder Woman's going to be good no matter what. And I caution people to worry about that and avoid that, because we saw that happen with Ghostbusters, the remake with the female cast. There were people that were so aggressively wanting that to do well because they wanted, oh yeah, girl power. And when you really look at Ghostbusters, I think if you look at Ghostbusters now, a year after it came out, you'd probably be like, yeah, it wasn't that good. It wasn't what it needed to be. And there was this crowd of people that wanted the girl power Ghostbusters to be a big hit, and it just wasn't. And I have a feeling that you can set yourself up with failure by hoping that Wonder Woman is going to be great. Let's just see Wonder Woman. If it's good, it's good. If it's not, it's not. That's the way the world works. I don't care if it's a female director. I don't care if it's the first major motion picture about a female superhero. I just want to see a good movie. And there have been stories that the early screening reviews, the very early sort of junket press screening reviews, are glowing. First of all, you got to take that with a grain of salt. Early junket reviews for everything are glowing. I've been on these junkets. Some of these people are absolutely quote whores. There are people that are just going to be like, oh, it's great, it's great, it's great, thank you for the free trip. There are people that are like that. Not everybody. I'm not saying everybody in the business is like that. But you do get that. And there's always big rumors about a big movie coming out getting a lot of glowing reviews as well. But remember, Batman versus Superman got a standing ovation when it was shown to Warner Brothers executives back before it was released earlier last year. And of course, we all know what happened from the critical side of that. So you know, let's just pump the brakes a little bit on Wonder Woman. And there's also things about people saying it's not marketed right, and then people are saying, well, maybe they got this right, and it's going to be a good movie, but it's thanks to the producers who are making it, and people are now backlashing on that, saying, well, maybe it's because of the woman who directed it, not the producers. But I would also caution you and say, hey, look, you know, people said that about not just Jon Favreau, but Kevin Feige after making Iron Man. Kevin Feige's the reason Marvel's as good as it is, and while it's why it's so streamlined. Final piece of news, the one that I find hilarious is some internet pirates have pirated Pirates of the Caribbean, the new movie, and they're holding it for ransom. They're saying they're going to release the first 5 minutes and then they're going to release the full movie. Here's the problem. Pirates of the Caribbean comes out next week. They're not exactly screwing up the release window, and I believe it opens probably in the middle of the week overseas. Disney's not blinking. Disney's like, whatever, I don't care. Go ahead and release it. Because here's the thing. You're ultimately giving people the choice of you can download it now from an illegal site, or you can wait 5 days and download it from an illegal site. Because pretty much once these movies get released, especially overseas and like places like Malaysia that have very loose laws on this sort of thing and very little oversight, it gets pirated immediately. So getting movies on pirated sites a week before they're out, that's not a big deal. Unless maybe it was like a Star Wars movie. I mean, I imagine if a couple weeks ago, a month or two ago, they had Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Disney would have been a little more nervous because that was highly anticipated. Not to say that Pirates 5 isn't, but it's not exactly the must-see movie of the summer. So I think this was just they didn't get a great property. Now, if they end up getting Episode 8, Star Wars Episode 8, oh yeah, Disney will play ball with that. They're not going to do it over Pirates of the Caribbean number 5. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I normally don't cover television on this show, but I do want to do a little bit of it here because there are two things that are television-related projects that I think are the most interesting trailers out this week. The first one is for Star Trek Discovery, which launches fall of 2017.
It's hard to imagine. You've served under me for 7 years.
Commander Burnham.
I think it is time we talked about you having your own command.
Two to transport. What am I looking at?
Object of unknown origin.
We've come all this way, Captain. It would be irresponsible to leave whatever that is unknown.
Captain, what signatures detected?
Context Starfleet Command. We have engaged the Klingons.
This looks like it has the feel and look of the new movies of Star Trek, Star Trek Into Darkness, and beyond. So it's abandoning the look and feel of the original classic Trek and Next Generation. They're going more towards the modern one, and that's fine. I just hope it goes back to a thinking man's sci-fi. I think it's possible. I think that they leave themselves open to that, and at least the reaction of the characters and the way they interplay in this trailer makes it possible. And I know people are complaining because the outfits they're wearing in the very beginning, which you can't see because it's a radio, but outfits look exactly like the Rey outfit from Star Wars The Force Awakens. But considering how much J.J. Abrams cross-pollinated those series anyways and then ended up being in charge of Rey, I that didn't bother me. It also doesn't have lens flares, but there's a lot of backlighting on the character. So this looks good. It looks like it's got high quality of production and special effects. I just hope that they have the stories and the more thinking man side to back that up. The next one I want to play real quickly is The Dark Crystal. Age of Resistance is getting a trailer, and this actually just harkens back to the original Dark Crystal movie.
It's probably the hardest thing that I've ever worked on. I had to think of it as sort of a work of art. It's something hundreds of people created. It's a wonderful texture and depth to this world. It was the most work, it was the most difficult, but it was the most fun, it was the most rewarding. And of all projects, it's the one that I'm the most proud of.
Now, this series is going to be released fall of 2017 on Netflix. I'm actually looking forward to this mainly because I'd like to see them go back to puppetry. What terrifies me about this, as much as I loved The Dark Crystal when it came out, and as much as I want to see more about it in the history of the Skeksis and the Mystics and how all this stuff worked, I do not want them to go to CGI. If it's Jim Henson's Creature Shop and they're actually going to use puppetry and real practical designs, I'm all for that. I just hope that all they're doing to use with digital is background and augmenting and wire removal. I do not want to see fully CGI creatures. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul, with a special guest. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to jump right into the movie reviews with the first film of the week, which is Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul. Let's just go ahead and play the trailer. The Heffleys head out on a road trip, but the mom won't let the kids play on their tech, insisting they bond as a family when all the boys want to do is go to a gaming convention.
There's one thing I've learned from my years of being a kid. It's that you have zero control over your own life.
Everybody, who's excited about the Great Heffley Road Trip?
This is perfect. Player Expo's in Indianapolis this weekend. It's only 2 inches away. I'm not sure that's how maps work.
Changing destination.
Oh, look how cute. The pig's better potty trained than you, Greg. Oh my God!
This is, of course, the reboot of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series, because they had the original films, which started making about 10 years ago. You know, as kids tend to do, they get older. And so they had to recast, get a new director, but they're still trying to make them relatively consistent. Now, because I am not a child, I am a man in my 40s, I figured I may not be the exact person that you want to hear from about this movie. So I thought I'd get somebody who would be a little more into it, and very specifically into it, and he's the target market. And I'd like to introduce everybody to Nicholas Carr, my son. Say hello, Nick.
Hi, everybody.
Yes. Now, Nick, how old are you?
9.
All right. Now, you've seen the other Diary of a Wimpy Kids movies, right?
Yes.
What did you think of them?
They were awesome. Watch it, though. I don't think they should have changed.
Well, they had to recast everybody. Well, you're saying that the guy who played Roderick in the first three films, they should have just kept him.
Yes.
What about the parents, though?
They were fine.
Well, but should they have recast them?
No.
You think the only people they should have recast were the kids, the little kids, like Greg, who's nowadays Greg, he's got like a beard and everything now.
Yes.
How many of the books have you read?
Every single one.
Every single one? How many are there?
12.
You've 11. Read 12? You've read 11. 11 of the books?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I guess it's because your mom signs off on all the reading assignments from school, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You like the first three movies. I remember we watched them as a family over the course of a couple weeks, right?
Yes.
Did you like anything better about this movie itself?
I didn't like the mom because she was bad.
Bad?
Like, she was too overprotective.
She was kind of insane, wasn't she?
Yes.
Now, how would you have handled being on a big road trip, not being able to use your tech?
I would die.
You would die? You would end up, we'd end up at the destination and you'd be a corpse.
I would figuratively die.
Well, that's a good word. What did you think of the kid? Did you like the kid who played Greg?
Greg was good.
Okay.
He was good. I like that he likes video games.
Well, you like video games too.
Yes.
But you like playing on your, well, you have an Xbox.
Yeah.
And you play like Terraria.
Yes.
And other things we won't mention because I would be called irresponsible if I let people know about those. But you also play on your Kindle.
Yeah.
And you watch videos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what did you think of the idea of putting in this, one of the characters in the movie is this guy who he plays video games and they watch YouTube videos about him playing video games. Did you like that? Because you watch those kind of things, don't you?
Yes.
Who do you watch most on the YouTube stuff?
Skylander Boy and Girl and Stampy.
Stampy? yeah. Stampy Blonde Nose Butt or whatever his name is?
Stampy Longhead.
Stampy Longhead. Okay. Did they baptize him Stampy Longhead or is that a fake name?
That's a YouTube name.
Oh, okay. I liked the movie. I thought it was cute. And it had fart jokes in it. You like the fart jokes?
Yes.
Is that your favorite part?
Pretty much.
Pretty much the fart jokes. So if there was a movie that was just nothing but fart jokes, that's like five stars.
I'd laugh the whole time.
Okay, so fart jokes and body humor, noises, things coming out of other parts of your body.
Yes.
That's what makes, that's the magic buttons you have to push.
Yes.
To get the seal of approval of a 9-year-old in America today.
Yes.
Okay. I thought that the first three movies really captured what it's like as a kid watching the world go by. It still felt real, but what was important to a kid was what was important in that movie. And I felt that they didn't quite get that match in this one because I thought the parents were kind of a garbage family, really,
yeah,
weren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, in the other ones, I always thought that the mom and the dad were, they were kind of, they meant well, but maybe they're just kind of dumb at times. They didn't know exactly what they were supposed to do. But in this one, they just made dumb decisions that really hadn't made no good sense. Like, for example, when she wouldn't let him play games in the car, video games. That's insane.
The mom was terrible.
Yeah.
The dad was fine.
Why was the dad fine? Why was the mom bad and the dad fine?
The mom was just the mom.
Yeah.
As in most families except ours.
Okay. Well, wait. How's your mother different than the mom in this movie? I'm going to let you get in trouble in this
one. She's a teacher. And she lets us play tech in the car.
Well, yeah. I mean, that.
And she doesn't do terrible lunches in the car and they have math cards.
Well, no, but you know what? Didn't we go down to Florida this Christmas?
Yes.
We went down to Florida. We drove down to Florida, which is like a 15-hour drive. And if I recall, your mom did have little activity packets for her. She had made these little things and you could do like a bingo, a car bingo.
Yeah, but that. Yeah. But that...
But you didn't have to learn anything?
No.
So how are they different?
My mom is a teacher, and...
Yeah. I heard that somewhere, yeah.
And she has good games,
yeah.
And she lets us play in the car.
Yeah. You know what it means when you're a teacher?
No.
You drink a lot of wine at home, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. This is my other issue with the movie. They, first of all, they like stopped at like five hotels along the way.
Yeah.
I don't know where they were going because I think they were from New York going to like Indiana.
They were terrible hotels.
They were garbage hotels. Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost got hepatitis just watching them go to the hotel. Now, what's your favorite thing to do in a hotel?
Sleep.
No, it is not. It is not sleep. What's your favorite thing? You go to a hotel, what's the first thing you ask for?
Soda?
No.
Pool.
Yes.
Pool.
Yes. What did you think of the pools in this movie?
Terrible.
Disgusting.
Yeah. The only pool that was open was the hot tub. And the Beauty family was in it for like 50 billion hours.
This is like a super garbage family. And
yeah.
That's another thing that kind of weirded me out on this one because it felt just like too real. Is the Beardo family like was coming after them. Like it got like almost criminal how much this family was going after Greg and his brother Roderick.
Yes.
And we stayed in some nice hotels. We stayed in some ones that are okay.
Yeah.
But nothing like that. I mean, that thing looked awful. I know a friend who went to a hotel and he found somebody had, let's just say they left a present next to one of the beds. The present, they made themselves, we'll say. Did you understand what I'm saying there? And that seemed like a better hotel than the hotel that they stayed at.
Yeah.
Okay. I always say, does a movie rock or does it suck? Or does it kind of rock or kind of suck? So those are the different versions I can do. Now, what do you say for Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul?
I'd say... Kind of rock.
Kind of rocks?
Yes.
All right. You know, I'm going to go and I'm going to say kind of rocks because even though it wasn't as good as the other ones, I did see that the fart jokes spoke to you.
Yes,
and it's good for kids. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks too.
Yeah.
It kind of rocks.
Thank you, Nicholas, for being on the show with me.
You're welcome.
And maybe we'll have you on again sometimes. Did you have a good time?
Yes.
All right. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Alien Covenant and everything.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. We've got the long haul out of the way. Let's talk about the one that's probably going to be the biggest this weekend, and that is Alien Covenant. In this sequel to Prometheus, a ship of colonists get sidetracked to explore a new world where they run into David from Prometheus, who has special plans for them.
It's the first ever large-scale colonization mission, and everyone back on Earth is really grateful. We're making history here. What happened here?
Before I even really talk about the movie itself, let's talk about sort of the structure of Alien and its other adjacent movies. You had Alien, then Aliens, then Alien 3, then Alien Resurrection, and then you had the Alien versus Predator movies. And then if you were going to have, I think it was Neil Blomkamp was going to be doing a sequel to Aliens. Those kind of splintered off, and then they did Prometheus, which was a prequel. And I think Ridley Scott is just only following his own movies, which is Alien, Prometheus, and now Alien Covenant. Now, Alien Covenant is a sequel to Prometheus, which itself was a prequel to Alien. And it all depends. Whether you like this movie is going to depend on what you thought of Prometheus. I tended to break ranks with a lot of people in my business. I loved Prometheus. I know a lot of people did not. I know a lot of people complained about stuff. I don't care. I thought it was fantastic. I thought that Ridley Scott took what was essentially just a little horror story on a spaceship and expanded it to a much larger universe and had philosophical questions and theological questions and opened it up to a much, not just greater world, but a greater galaxy, a greater universe where you had these engineers. And I know people said, here we had this one question of where this alien came from. And instead of answering that one question, it just opened up a whole bunch of other questions. And I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that it went from horror sci-fi to a strong sci-fi movie on its own and with like epic contemplations that are going all the way back to like 2001. Yeah, I get it. I understand the complaints about it. Charlize Theron can only run in a straight line. Noomi Rapace was stupid in taking off her helmet. And you shouldn't play with space snakes that are going to eat your face. I get that. I understand that this is stuff that you're not supposed to do in a horror sci-fi movie. But then again, I was fine with that. That stuff didn't bother me. I think people were obsessing about stupid things in that movie because there's plenty of stupid things that happen in the original Alien. Well, just for an example, every time they land a doggone ship, the dashboard blows up. You make them a little sturdier if you're going to make them be able to land. So I loved Alien. I loved Prometheus. With that said, because I love Prometheus so much, they dial back a lot with Alien Covenant. They dial back the sci-fi speculative fiction elements a bit. I mean, they're in there because, of course, they run into David, and David, of course, was the artificial human from the Prometheus film, and you see him early, he opens up in the movie, you see him in the movie, and he's talking to Victor Whalen. They do a little bit more with him, and they examine some of his psyche and some of his thoughts, which I thought was fantastic. But that's very limited. They also just go back and say, hey, we're just going to give you a good old-fashioned alien movie in which the crew turns into fodder for the alien. And that's fine if that's what you want. If what you wanted was another movie, but like I said, some of these other sequels just turned out to just be another excuse to throw the alien somewhere and eat people. You know, whether they're on a planet or whether they're on a spaceship or whether they were in a small town in America, which is what happened with Alien versus Predator Requiem. So when it turned into an alien movie, and it does, and you see that in the trailers, I mean, it's clear there's a xenomorph running around and there's a facehugger in the trailers. You know that the elements from Alien that they did not have in the first one exist. that works for what it is. I liked opening it, the series up a bit, and you don't get that very much. It's a little more closed. And on top of it, there's a couple things that it does that bother me. One of the things, and this works for the pacing of the film, things happen biologically so fast. And I remember seeing this with the Alien versus Predator movies. The alien, you know, you get the face hugger and the thing's bursting out of the chest, you know, 3 minutes later. Whereas in the original Alien, it was like a day or two at least. I mean, there was a period of time where they were examining Kane on the table and he didn't have the chest burster happen for a while. So I think there are some conflicts in terms of the internal logic of the story, and there's other things which would be spoilery. But ultimately, it's cool. It looks cool on the big screen. It's not exactly what I wanted from a Prometheus sequel, but I guess it will work as an Alien prequel. So I'm going to have to say that Alien Covenant kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about everything, everything. A girl with a special immune disorder must remain in a sterile environment, but when she falls for the boy next door, she fights with her mom to break free and be a real teenager for once in her life.
This is my whole world. My nurse, my mom, my sickness. I'm 18 and I've never been outside. If I did, I would probably die.
I see you checking your email and looking for him out the window.
He's kind. Don't have to call it love. When I talk to him, I feel like I'm outside.
You're really different than I thought you were going to be.
What would happen if you went outside?
Here I have HEPA filters, outsides, viruses, and bacteria.
This is not my movie. This is not my kind of movie at all. It's a teen romance book, and it reminds me of the book The Fault in Our Stars, even though that's a little more realistic because it's about cancer, even though everyone's beautiful when they're dying of cancer. But it romanticizes illness. Which I guess works because, I mean, this basically is the most practical way you can lock somebody up in a tower, like a princess, like a Rapunzel type character, which is what the girl is in this movie. She can't go outside because, you know, she'd die. You know, bacteria is everywhere. And, you know, after being that way all her life, she just urges that she wants to go out. And I understand that and I get that. And I can see where that connects with teenage girls feeling like they're trapped. Quite literally, she's trapped in her own home. And because it's based on a book, you can see at the beginning of him when the boy moves next door, he always wears black and he rides a skateboard, which is so cliche. I'm sorry. It's just, oh, I'm so attracted to the bad boy. As much as that does work, it does get a bit corny, but the filmmakers do make it kind of a really neat way of getting them together to get to know each other. Because in the book, I think it was probably just like texting and email. Well, it's boring to watch on screen. So they find interesting cinematic ways to get the kids together to have a relationship and develop it. And the girl who plays the lead in, she's actually quite charming. She's good. The guy who plays the would-be boyfriend, he's kind of generic. There's nothing special about him. But the problem with the film is, while it's sweet, at least in the beginning, it really gets kind of dumb near the end. I mean, I'm not going to go, because there's spoilers would be involved in this. But it turns into a contrived story. It doesn't feel like you're reading a real story. If you ever come across a story and this, either things work out too perfectly or too imperfectly, or if there's somewhat of a deus ex machina reveal, that kind of taints the movie in my experience, because you end up with a story that doesn't feel real. And I felt that the realness of this was lost on that. There's also other things, like smaller things, and this isn't me nitpicking, of course. But like, there's a scene where she wants to run away and she goes and she gets a backpack. And I'm like, why does she have a backpack? Why in the world would this girl who's literally trapped in her house, why would she ever buy a backpack? You don't need a backpack to go from your bedroom to the living room. It's kind of silly. And like, there's a scene where she needs an ID. And I'm like, well, where'd she get a driver's license? I mean, yeah, she's 18, but. Do they get some sort of thing so she could vote? I mean, these are things that, of course, I think through that most people don't. This is based on a book, and it's for teenage girls. Last time I checked, I'm not a teenage girl, and I'm not quite in tune with what teenage girls are into. But this movie cup was corny and silly to me, and as well shot as it is, and as good as the at least the girl is as the actor, even though I don't understand why she does her makeup and dyes her hair every morning because she's trapped in her house. But still, I'm not the teenage girl. I'm not the market this is for, and I think that the teenage girl market, the people who read the book, are going to love it if there are enough people out there. But ultimately, I'm going to have to say that everything kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to do a review of Norman, featuring an interview with Yuri Drami from the Jerusalem Press Club, the Weekly Box Office, and the Home Cinema Roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue with the movie reviews, and I want to play a trailer for a film that's opening at least locally in the Columbus, Ohio market for myself this week, and I know it's been elsewhere. It's actually opened overseas. It's a co-production of American Film, and it's funded by the Israeli Film Fund and the Jerusalem Film Fund, which is, of course, obviously, you know, based in Israel. And I was in Israel a couple years ago. I was a guest of the Jerusalem Press Club, and I got to go to their film festival, and I saw a lot of movies, so I got very used to seeing Israeli Film Fund, Jerusalem Film Fund showing up in front of these films. But this is a much bigger movie than some of the smaller films that you see come out of Israel, because, you know, Israel's a smaller country, and it doesn't quite have the massive $200 million budgets to throw away on movies the way American companies do. So I got a chance to check this one out. So let's just play the trailer. Richard Gere plays a busybody New Yorker who squirms into the good graces of a would-be prime minister of Israel and faces some tough questions as their careers pick up.
Can you explain to me how your business works? I'm curious.
If you ever need anything, feel free to call.
To be practical, we need to raise approximately $14 million to save us from the wrecking ball. And this is where our friend Norman Oppenheimer comes in.
You're like a drowning man trying to wave at an ocean liner. But I'm a good swimmer. Yeah, don't forget that. Something good will happen. Trust me.
Now, one of the things I notice is it doesn't fall into the category of one of the three topics that show up in most Israeli-based films that are funded out of Israel, and I'll talk about those in a little bit, but it's something different, and it really is this amalgam of New York politics and New York way of life and the Jewish community in New York and their ties to Israel and the nation. Now, he's not prime minister. The guy who plays the prime minister isn't prime minister until later in the movie, but he's on his way. His trajectory is going up. The most striking thing about this is actually the cast. It's a really good cast, and they do a great job. I mean, Richard Gere, who generally just plays Richard Gere, he does a decent job sort of tempering his performance. He still feels very Gere-ish, but he does temper his performance and alter it enough to basically be very convincing as this New York busybody working around in the Jewish community. You've got Steve Buscemi, who does a good job. You got Michael Sheen, who is fantastic in the film, as he is in everything he does. But this is just an interesting look at the collision of Israeli and American communities and politics. And I found it compelling. I love these sort of like skullduggery type stories that take place in the underbelly of politics that you don't normally see in the news. And I thought this was a neat and eye-opening. It was different enough because it is American and somebody who's not Jewish to kind of have a window into this world. So I'm going to have to actually say that Norman totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Of course, we're talking about Norman. When I started watching this, I saw it come up as Jerusalem Film Fund and the Israeli Film Fund. I'm like, I know people in Israel. So I got on the phone and I talked to my good friend Yuri Drami from the Jerusalem Press Club and sort of get his take on a couple things where I'm sort of ignorant of the politics. And I just kind of wanted to get that Israeli perspective on it. When I was over in Jerusalem and I got a chance to see a lot of bits of Israeli cinema, I noticed there are three general themes that were often explored. Almost all the films fell into these three general categories of tradition, traditional values, modernization, that the clash between that, the Israeli-Palestine relations, all the way from the two-state solutions to just interpersonal communications, or it dealt with the Holocaust. And what struck me with this one is this doesn't deal with any of those. It actually has a very different theme to it than a lot of the stuff that I saw. Can you speak on the actual theme of this from an Israeli perspective?
You're right. I think shows the greatness of Sidor. Yossi Sidor is a filmmaker. I mean, that he's not entrenched in his old film or the old themes that he was doing before or touching before, but he's ready to take on something which I think we never saw before. And that's, by the way, it's called an Israeli film, but one wonders, is it really an Israeli film or Israeli-American film or both? Anyway, this is another way, because Israeli films are Israeli. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with the Israeli scene, with the Israeli history, as you mentioned, Israeli history, values, conflicts, etc. Here is something which goes between Israel and New York, or American Jewish scene in America, and it tries to encapsulate both.
Do you see this as sort of an outreach to the American cinema, but also Jewish Americans, particularly in New York, because it does deal with that. And the movie also deals with the Israeli politics, because you have the prime minister as a character, but you also have just the internal politics of just around town. Do you see this as an outreach and possible opening a door to more collaborations?
I would certainly think so. It's two films put in together into one film, okay? Because you can see that could have easily done a whole film about the Israeli politics and at the same time do a whole other film on the New York or American Jewish politics. Yes, I think he's looking both ways, definitely with the cast. It's an American film, I mean, mostly. Apart from Leo Ashkenazi, who plays the Israeli prime minister. So, yes, he took a very ambitious take here to perhaps tell both audiences, look, I'm a great filmmaker, how about that?
That struck me because it does have such a well-known American cast, you know, Richard Gere, Michael Sheen, Steve Buscemi. There's a lot of very familiar faces to it.
By the way, Kevin, to cast them in such Jewish role was striking, brave, I would say, very ambitious.
So you were happy with Gere's performance
then? Oh, I think it's great. He just reminded us, forget about his Buddhist and all other things. He's just a great actor, and I think he comes across as very humane.
From the Israeli perspective, with the prime minister and Charlotte Gainsborough's character who's going after him for possible corruption and bribery. I have to admit, I'm somewhat ignorant of the day-to-day politics of Israel, as I think a lot of people in America are. Is this a big concern? Is this something that comes up a lot? Are these issues that are common, or was just thrown in as sort of a, just to make it more interesting?
No. It's so connected to the Israeli, today's scene, that it's, some people say that it was written about Netanyahu. Because as we speak, Netanyahu is under police investigation for corruption. So people thought, oh, this is a film that foresaw the troubles and the downfall of Netanyahu. But it's a good film because I think it's very candid in the way that power corrupts.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Was I correct? Last week I said that Guardians of the Galaxy was going to make $70 million, and I was close. It was a little bit less, $65 million, which isn't bad. It's like going into this weekend with over $600 million. It is going great guns in the United States and overseas. Snatched and King Arthur, both, they battled for second. Snatch was a little more on par, just coming in just under $20 million, which is okay for expectations, at least, but not great for sort of a follow-up to Trainwreck. King Arthur got a lot of buzz because it only made $15 million, and everyone's like, oh, it's a big bomb. I knew this was coming. Well, you can say that about any movie that they're trying. And this, you know, if you're out there writing think pieces about why it was stupid to make a King Arthur movie, because nobody was asking for it, you're part of the problem as to why Hollywood doesn't do anything original. So don't turn around and write a think piece next week about Pirates of the Caribbean coming out and saying, oh, Hollywood just does copies and sequels and reboots and remakes. You're part of the problem if you're piling on because they took a chance with King Arthur. It didn't pay out. But you know what? Pirates of the Caribbean back in 2003... if Disney didn't take a chance on pirate movies then, you wouldn't have had that as a success. So when you have a movie like Guardians of the Galaxy, which was a huge chance and it does well, you can't sit there and then pile on a movie like John Carter and say, well, why did they do this? That was stupid of you, Hollywood. Why put that much money into a movie? You're part of the problem. Anyways, this week, I think Alien Covenant, probably good for $45 million. Everything else, I think, is going to be a little bit lower, quite a bit lower than that. Guardians of the Galaxy will probably come in second. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Bunch of new movies that were big movies actually in the beginning of the year that weren't big movies in America but overseas. Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage and Resident Evil, The Final Chapter kind of fizzled in America. But if you look at the box office chart, the worldwide, they made like 80% of their gross overseas. They're actually big hits, $300-some million each one. There's also The Space Between Us, which was another one of those sort of like romance movies based on a book that's completely absurd. Anyways, that is it. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and Baywatch. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.